BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Welcome to Strong Message Here, Strong Recommend, our cultural recommendations and a look at their impact on language. I'm Helen Lewis.
And I'm Amanda Yurchi.
Amanda, you have come bearing a gift.
Yes, my recommendation. It's not a new book. It's Richard II by William Shakespeare. I'm in the process of plugging my enormous gaps in my reading. And although I love Shakespeare, there are just lots of the plays that I still haven't read.
I did that during the pandemic. With a couple of friends, this is the only improving thing I did during the pandemic. Yeah. We did a little book group and we read all of the history plays. Because I thought, what other world am I going to read Henry VI Part 3?
Yeah.
It seems unlikely that this is going to be, what have I got to do this evening? Oh, shall I flick Netflix? No, I'll read all of the Henry.
Yes, I read The Odyssey, which I hadn't read before, and which Christopher Nolan is now doing a film.
You could have saved all that time.
I could have, yeah.
But Richard II is, so it's the first of the history plays, isn't it? Yes, that'd
yes,
be right.
Not the first written, but so Shakespeare had done Henry VI, three parts prior to that, but it's the first of the sequence that will go Richard II, Henry IV, Henry V, parts one and two.
All the three Henrys and then Richard III, and then it ends with him obviously being deposed by the Tudors, who were the ruling family at the time Shakespeare was writing.
Yes, and Richard II is often overshadowed by the much more crowd-pleasing Richard III. I first encountered the play as a television adaptation. BBC did an adaptation of all the history plays called The Hollow Crown. Ben Whishaw was Richard II. Rory Kinnear was Bolingbroke, who becomes Henry IV. I mean, it was the best drama. He's very good at drama. I know. Some Shakespeare plays.
Hot take from Armando.
Dramatically are quite clunky.
Whichever
tell
one
me
is
what's happened. Oh, all happened over there. We're not staging it, but let me tell you, I'm a character you've not met yet. I'm just coming on to tell you what's happened.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. There was a bit where we were in bed and we snuck someone in who wasn't the person the other person thought was.
Yes.
And you think, really, really,
but
Shakespeare,
in
are we doing
the
this?
Second, the drama off stage is less important than the drama going on internally in the mental collapse of Richard II. Because Richard II believes that he has been chosen by God to be king, and therefore there is no one should be questioning his role, except reality plays itself out. And
he goes on, doesn't he, in the manner of many kings at the time, have a slightly disastrous war with the French?
He does a little bit of that, but also more disastrously, he exiles Bolingbroke.
Who's his cousin. Who then returns later.
A bit petulantly. And confiscates all his estates and wealth. So Bolingbroke, pretty miffed off, manages to round up an army to come back and, if need be, claim the throne off Richard. So Richard is deposed. I'm not giving too much away because it's all in the history books. But what is great and memorable about the play is it's about the mental collapse that Richard II goes through, in that if that identity, which he believes has been given to him by God and is unquestionable, is then questioned and reduced to nothing, what is he? And it becomes this very, it's one of the very
There's
few
There's a line,
Shakespeare,
isn't there, in the deposition scene.
Yeah.
So very famously, it's got a scene where Richard has to accept that he's going to have to give up the crown. And he says something like, I know, for I must nothing be.
Yes.
And it's this kind of, I think the way I would sell it to people who haven't read it or seen it is that it's about a fey, petulant boy.
Yeah.
King, who loses everything that's valuable to him and his status, and through that comes to a kind of spiritual nobility. I think that's what I've seen it three times, which is kind of mad. I've seen Ralph Fiennes do it, David Tennant, and God, I saw someone quite recently do it. Not Jonathan Bailey, although he recently did it at The Bridge. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a really underrated and beautiful Shakespeare play.
It's really beautiful because it's one of the few plays that he wrote in verse all the way through. So it's very lyrical. That's why I'm saying, although there is a lot of physical action off stage, as it were, the real action is to do with the language. Richard tries to articulate his unique position as someone chosen by God to be king in this wonderful language. And then the language starts, like you say, the language starts reducing itself to very commonplace references.
Do you have a favourite line? Because I think the bit that people will know, the kind of, you know, the sort of to be or not to be of this play is John of Gaunt's speech, which is about this England, which he gives to Richard basically saying, I'm dying.
Yeah.
You're screwing all this up. This is a really good country, but watch it, mate.
I'm going to miss this.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's the memorable one. No, it's when Richard is kind of alone, bereft of his identity, his role, his power. And he's almost like Register trying to make a kingdom out of himself and out of his prison cell. Yeah, I mean, so he says things like, cover your heads and mock not flesh and blood with solemn reverence. Throw away respect, tradition, form, and ceremonious duty. For you have but mistook me all this while. I live with bread like you. Feel want, taste grief, need friends. Subjected thus, how can you say to me, I am a king? I mean, it's total despair.
I mean, that's interesting. When you say that, it makes me think of the fact that Shylock in The Merchant of Venice has a similar bit where he says, essentially, as a Jewish person, I'm just like you.
Yeah, prick me, do we not bleed?
Yeah, Shakespeare must have discovered that it was quite a powerful thing in the theatre to take these characters and make them have a direct appeal to the audience. And this is one of the things I think is one of the great innovations that he brought to English drama, was these complicated psychological real characters, rather than the stock characters of the pageant plays and the very religious dramas. I have a favourite line on it, which is Richard saying, I wasted time and now does time waste me? Which is symptomatic of that fall where he was just a young, callow boy king.
Yeah.
And now he just realizes that he wasted all of that time. And now he has to sit in a prison cell at someone else's schedule.
Yes. And then, he is killed. It's not quite explained.
Spoiler.
It's like, here's another gobsmacking fact, actually. It was written in 1595 when Shakespeare also wrote Romeo and Juliet and Midsummer Night's Dream.
I know. It's one of those things that you just think, oh, God, what did I do this year? Yeah, I know. The thing that always struck me about it, too, was that it was quite politically brave to write it. So the 1590s, right at the end of Elizabeth I's reign. She
Who's
dies
going
in
to take over?
1601.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing that everybody talked about at the time was the deposition scene, which was watching a king renounce their crown. Now, she was she's only the granddaughter of Henry VII, who basically had no real claim to the throne. It was through a sort of semi-minor line and very tenuous. And then he said it by conquest too. So you're watching someone with actually really a very new dynasty, shaky dynasty, single, childless at the end of her life, and then saying, what happens if you get rid of a king? Mm. You know, one of the things I think is really nice about studying Shakespeare is trying to think what the original audience would have brought to it.
Yes.
And that must have, seeing that on stage must have been quite a big deal.
Yeah, and very popular. And we talked about the history cycle. It was after that he then went on to write the remaining, you know, the Henry IV's and the Henry V's parts 1 and 2 and a spin-off.
Was that like his sort
John
of Too
Falstaff,
Fast, Too Furious? That everybody really just, they were like, oh, we like these ones. Can we have a few sequels?
But the idea of like high art actually, you know, also was commercially successful. That he wasn't below Shakespeare to write a sequel and a post sequel and
Too Richard, Too Furious.
Kind of, yes.
That's how I think of this play now.
The Tudor cinematic universe. Is,
I love that, yeah.
Or is it Plantagenet? I don't know.
Yeah.
Ask me to describe the War of the Roses. I get very confused. I don't know what happened there. But
I read on holiday Catherine by Anya Seton, which is a classic historical novel, which is about Catherine Swinford, who is the mistress and then later wife of John of Gaunt. So if you are... There are a lot of people who change their name when they get a new title.
Yeah.
I think that's also a problem with the history plays. Someone will start off as someone and then they'll come back with a completely different name.
Yes, and you're meant to know who they
are. Who's this guy now? He's from earlier. Yeah.
And also, I bring it up also because a lot of these history plays are, when they're staged, are modernized to reflect current politics, clashes and titles for the leadership and competitions to see who succeeds. Who knows? By the time we come back for our next season, who knows where we'll be in terms of the leadership of the different parties. So it's 1-2.
Which Plantagenet is Keir Starmer? That's what you're making me think. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is he Richard II or is he?
Or Richard III. Will he be found buried in a car park?
Well, you can find Richard II at all good theatres, and I hear it's been published as a text, but since one of the folios. Thanks for listening to Strong Message here, strong recommend. We'll be back next week with a recommendation from me. Make sure you're subscribed on BBC Sounds. Goodbye.
Goodbye.